I join Brother John in welcoming each and every one of you to the service this morning. We're glad you're here. It's always good to have visitors attend the services here at Knollwood, and we want you to feel at home and extend to you a very cordial invitation. Come back whenever you can. Last week was a hectic week in many ways, and yet an enjoyable one. Brethren saw to it that I was fed twice a day. I went out for meals. About time you get through with lunch and it's time to go for dinner, as we call it in Kentucky, supper. And then morning services on Tuesday and Thursday. The brethren said, well, you got to go fishing one day. So that was a morning, and rushed back for lunch. And then you got to play some music while you're here, or several of them play, and you got to have a jam session. So that was another afternoon. Then I left Friday night and drove up to Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, and got a motel and used it for 4 or 5 hours. As soon as I woke up, I got up, came on, and got here yesterday about 3 o'clock. So it's been a busy week indeed. We closed out Friday night with a house full of people, and they had good attendance all through the meeting, and it was very pleasant to be with them. But it's good to be home, and I'm glad to be back where I can eat what I want, although that was delicious. But if I just want an apple, then I can eat an apple. Isn't that right, Marvin? This morning, for a few minutes, I want to talk about faith manifested. And I'm using Hebrews chapter 11 for the basis of our study. This whole chapter focuses on faith, examples of faith. Someone said this is God's Hall of Fame, but not all of them are in here. But many of them are, to illustrate what faith does, the reward of faith. There are difficult times, but faith pays. And these brethren were wavering. They were about to go back to Judaism. And here in this section, he shows that the gospel is a way of faith. You just persevere. You keep on keeping on. And you're going to be rewarded eventually. In verse 6 of Hebrews 11, the inspired writer states, "But without faith it is impossible to please him." That is, to please God. "For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him." We can't please God, the passage says, without faith. What is faith? In verse 3, or in verse 1 rather, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." I always remember what a black preacher said years ago. And they have their own unique way of putting it. He said, "Faith is like chicken gravy. It's the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." But in your American Standard Version, faith is the assurance of things hoped for. Faith is the certainty, brethren, of all of our hopes and aspirations, and the evidence of things not seen, or in American Standard, the conviction of those things not seen. Conviction of reality, that these things exist. Deep faith means that we have total confidence of heaven, of life after death, of going home to be with the Lord. that somewhere out there, there's a place called heaven. There's a beautiful place we call heaven as we sing. And that's what faith is. But how's it manifested? I want you to notice in this chapter that faith obeys, regardless whether it makes any sense from a human perspective or not. It may not have any rationality. It may contradict our human inclinations. But if God says it, we don't argue about it. We don't dispute it. We simply surrender, submit. Look at verse 7. By faith, Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house. The Lord said there's going to be a flood. I'm going to destroy this world. And can't you imagine the mockers as they saw Noah building this huge boat, sitting out there, no water anywhere to be seen. He's building a ship. But God told him to prepare. Here's the dimensions. Here's the material. And he got busy. And this passage says that he did it by faith and prepared an ark to the saving of his house. Look in verses 17 through 19. By faith, Abraham, when he was tried. Now, Genesis 22 states when he was tempted. But God doesn't tempt man from the standpoint that we look at it. He tries man. He tests man. In this case, he was testing his faith. And by faith, Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac. That's unusual. Lord, how are you going to fulfill your promise? You told me that through my seed should all the families of the earth be blessed, namely through Isaac, and here you want me to put him to death, to kill him? But in Genesis 22, he didn't hesitate. He rose up early in the morning. He did it hastily. So by faith, Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, that, and he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, that in Isaac shall thy seed be called. Now look at his reasoning. Accounting that God was able to raise him up. I'll do what you say, Lord, because you have the power to raise him up from the dead. To raise him up even from the dead, from whence also he received him in a figure. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob, and so forth. Here's faith that obeys, ladies and gentlemen. It doesn't question God. It believes that God's way is best, that he has the answer, that he will see it through. Drop down to verse 30 of Hebrews 11. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were compassed about 7 days. It was contrary to all military strategy. I want you to walk around or march around the city one time every day for 6 days. You can read this in Joshua 6. On the seventh day, ought 7 priests to take 7 trumpets of ram's horn, and I want them to go before the ark, And I want you to march around that city 7 times. The skeptic said that couldn't be done. That was an error. You can't march around a city 7 times in one day. And yet, archaeologists, when they uncovered or when they excavated the city, they found it was a small, compact city, could have been marched around easily 7 times in one day. But you blow the ram's horn and then shout. And they did that, and the Bible says the walls fell down flat. No battering ram. And no sneak attack. They were out there going around and around that city. Faith does exactly what God says to do. And I may not see any sense in it whatsoever. Namely, ladies and gentlemen, baptism is one of them. Or taking up a collection on the first day of the week and not Wednesday night. Or having grape juice, the Lord's Supper, rather than Pepsi-Cola or some other kind of liquid. I don't know all of the answers. But I submit to God's wisdom, and faith complies, faith conforms, faith obeys. And we don't learn anything else today. I want to drive that home, that faith does exactly what the Lord demands. Faith also ventures. Faith obeys. Number two, faith ventures. Look in verse 8 of Hebrews 11. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed, and he went out, not knowing whither he went. Hundreds of miles he traveled into the land of Canaan. He left his homeland, severed his ties with friends, and he marched. God would show him the land, and he went. He had all the confidence in Jehovah. He's let him direct the way. Now, I like to know where I'm going when I travel. You do too. So I'll carry a road map. And I'll ask directions. Sometimes that doesn't work too well. Ask for directions. I was in a meeting in Columbia, Tennessee some years ago, and I asked them about a shortcut to get over to Interstate 24 into Chattanooga. I was on Friday night after it closed. And so they said, you go right out here and you turn left and you go a ways and turn right and so forth, and you can't miss it. You know, it's always easy for a person who knows the way to tell somebody else he can't miss it. But I missed it. So I said, I've got to have some help. And there were some fellas in the front yard. They had these electric instruments, guitars, and they were blasting out. And I pulled in. I said, I want directions how to get over Interstate 24. Well, he said, you go right down here, and then you turn left and so forth. And I was in trouble. It was dark, getting late. Out on a lonely road, and I saw a car parked, pulled off the side of the road, way up ahead of me, see the taillights, and I said, well, I don't like to stop and under these conditions, but I said, I'm desperate. So I pulled in front rather than in the back so they could see me, and I got out, and I went up to the door, and it was a woman sitting in there by herself. She said, am I glad to see you? I said, I'm glad to see you too. I said, I'm lost. She said, I'm out of gas. Well, I said, we can help one another. I said, I'm trying to get to 24. He said, you go right on down there a little piece in the traffic light and turn left and go right to it. He said, now do me a favor. So when you get into town, would you call my husband and tell him about where I am? And I said, I sure will. I called her husband. I said, your wife is out here outside of town, out of gas. Wanted you to come out there right away. He said, thank you. I suppose he went and helped her, but I got on 24. That was an adventure. And I didn't have the Lord directly guiding me as Abraham did, but I tell you, if he had, I wouldn't have needed the information. And I wouldn't need a road map. But Abraham went out. In verses 24 through 28 of Hebrews 11, Moses is introduced. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. And by faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing, listen to this, the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Why did Moses identify with the oppressed? He had power, he had prestige, he had wealth, he had everything going for him from a materialistic standpoint. But he saw something beyond this life. He saw God, the invisible. And so he chose to suffer affliction with the people of God. He ventured, ladies and gentlemen. He took risk. But oh, how it paid off. And in Matthew 17, he, along with Elijah, is on the Mount of Transfiguration with Jesus, talking about his crucifixion at Jerusalem. In verse 29, by faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians are saying to do, were drowned. You can read this in Exodus 14 chapter in more detail. Here was the pillar of cloud behind them, protecting them, separating between the Israelites and the Egyptians. Here was the Red Sea before them. They couldn't turn back and they couldn't go forward. What are we going to do? And the Lord said, Moses, lift up your hand. And the wind came up and the wind blew and God caused this to happen and the waters were separated and there was a wall of water on each side and the wind dried out the floor of that sea. And all that went down. Now you think about that, friend. You're talking about faith, confidence. That took it. I don't know how I would have tried to get across there. I don't know what I would have done, but it took a lot of trust to walk out in the middle of that sea with that huge wall of water on your left and on your right, and stayed there by the hand of God. But they went right on across on the other side. And then when the Egyptians pursued them, and Pharaoh was with them, as the book of Psalms tells us, that the walls of water came together and they drowned in the sea, and the horse and his rider were overthrown. And they saw the bodies of the Egyptians on the seashore. And Exodus 14, verse 30, that day the Lord saved them from the Egyptians. And in the 15th chapter, they sang the song of deliverance. Faith venturing. The Apostle Paul, in the 21st chapter of the book of Acts, had come to Caesarea, and he abode with Philip, the evangelist. He had four virgin daughters that prophesied in verse 9 of the 21st chapter of Acts. And there's a prophet who came down. You always come down when you went from Jerusalem to any place. He came down to Caesarea. Agabus did. And he took Paul's girdle and bound his hands and his feet and said, thus saith the Holy Ghost, so shall the Jews do at Jerusalem. Bind the man that owneth this girdle and shall deliver him into the hands of the Gentiles. And they besought Paul not to go up. And look at his response. In verse 13, then Paul answered, what mean ye to weep and to break my heart? For I am ready not to be bound only, but also, notice it, to die at Jerusalem. What for, Paul? Just to be a martyr? No. He said, for the name of the Lord Jesus. And we could go on and on about Paul, 2 Corinthians chapter 11. All that he suffered and experienced, the hardships and persecutions. What was the incentive, ladies and gentlemen? What was the motivation? It was faith. Faith. And we as the people of God need to take risk. As in the case of Epaphroditus in the second chapter of Philippians, verse 30, not regarding his own life, our revised version, risking his own life to serve and do a service to Paul. We as the people of God need to launch out in the deep as Peter stepped out into the water. We need to step out. We need to have the confidence that God will assist us and He'll help us and He'll protect us. And we might not be able to see the end, but God can help us and provide for us each day of our life, individually and congregationally. Many times we want to have it in our hands. We want to possess it. We want to be able to see the terminating point. Abraham couldn't see the terminating point. He just went right on out under God's direction. We need to give more glory to God, and we need to put more things into His hands. And I'm not talking about going out and doing things that are extreme. That God would have to work a miracle in our lives in order for it to succeed. But I'm saying, friends, that there are things that we can do. Many times we hesitate. We're reluctant. We say we can't do it. We have a defeatist attitude that if we let God help and provide and lead, we can accomplish. We can have the victory. Well, another interesting thing here in Hebrews 11, verses 11 and 12, is belief in the possibility of the impossible. Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed and was delivered of a child when she was past age because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore sprang there even of one and him as good as dead, so many as the stars of the sky and in multitude and as the sand which is by the seashore innumerable. In Genesis 18, angel said, the Lord said, Abraham, you're going to be a father. I'm close to 100. And Sarah overheard that and she laughed within herself. Me, a mother at about 90 years old? No way. And there's an interesting statement, brethren, there in Genesis 18. That was stated, that was made by the Lord. Is anything, now listen to this, is anything too hard for the Lord? That's a wonderful statement. It tells me, friends, though I can't understand and put it together from my human intelligence or mind about the resurrection, how that we can go back to the dust of the earth and here are tombs that have completely extinct, nothing but ashes. Here's those who buried at sea. Here's those who've been consumed by animals. Is anything too hard for the Lord? No, sir. The same God that made us and breathed into our nostrils the breath of life back under in the Garden of Eden is the same God who can take this dust wherever it's found and raise an immortal, glorified, spiritual body. how we limit the Lord many times. Because we don't have the power to do it, nothing else can do it. We are so insignificant. That's why the psalmist in Psalms chapter 8, what is man? Thou art mindful of him. And man is a minuscule. He's as the sand of the sea. You give that just a little ways, you can't even see a man as he walks to and fro. And here's this vast universe. It looks infinite. And here's man on this small planet, this small globe. And could God be mindful of us? Yes. And he put us here for his own glory. And when the Lord comes, there's going to be a resurrection. And we're going to have some kind of a body. I don't know what it'll be. And I've thought about that many times. We've discussed it about here are bodies, they wear out. They become frail. And here's our bodies, that. Here's some parts of them have to be amputated and removed. And yet the Lord takes that old dust and he raises it up. And here is a person who, what does he look like? 18, 19, 20 years old. And he'll be like that throughout eternity. The possibility of what we consider impossible. And whatever we think or reason, how could it be? How can it come to pass? We put our confidence in God. But back to Hebrews 11. Beginning in verse 13, we talk about faith manifested. We see an attitude toward life set forth in these passages. The inspired writer says, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned, but now they desire, listen to it, a better country. That is, and heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. By faith we see life not as an end, not as something that is caught in a chasm between two eternities. We see a life, friend, that's going somewhere. We see by faith that there is a beyond. And we picture this life, this world in which we live, as simply strangers and pilgrims. In 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 11. Peter was writing to Christians who were undergoing severe persecution and hardships. And here's what he said in verse 11. He said, dearly beloved, he said, abstain. I said, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust which war against the soul. We sing the song, this world is not my home. We are aliens here, friends. And we're pilgrims. We're going somewhere. And that place depicted in the Bible is heaven itself. And that's what makes life meaningful. That gives us purpose. That brings peace and happiness and joy to our hearts. I read a book some years ago, which I have. It's called Escape from Reason. And here's what this author said. He said, the basic reason that drugs are seriously taken today is not for escape or kicks. Now he said, the basic reason is not for escape or kicks, but because man, listen, is desperate. On the basis of rationality and logic, man has no meaning. and culture is becoming meaningless. Listen, man is therefore trying to find an answer in first order experiences. He's trying to find reality. This is what lies behind the modern drug mania. It is related to 1,000 years of pantheism, for Eastern mystics have taken hashish for centuries to achieve religious experience. So it is nothing new, even though it is new to us. Was he right? All around us is despair, is despondency. Why am I here? Where I came from? Where am I going? And to the Christian, by faith, we are moving out of this world, and everything should be interpreted in view of this transition. We look at life as a period of preparation for that beautiful home of the soul that Jesus has gone to prepare for us. Listen to the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And this is one of my favorite passages in the Bible. Beginning with verse 16. For which cause we faint not, but though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a what? A far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. How do you look, Paul? By faith. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. And so this grand, peerless apostle had come to the end of his life after all of the heartaches and the punishment and the imprisonment and the ridicule and the famine and destitute, or the destitution of his life. And he said, the time of my departure is at hand. I finished my course. I've kept the faith. I've run the race. Therefore, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me on that day, but not to me only, but to all those who love his appearing. Here's an attitude in life that we have. The Christians is altogether different, friends, and the pagans, or the person out here in the world who doesn't know the Lord Jesus Christ. But I want us to look also in verses 32 through 38. We're talking about faith manifested. And here we see that faith is heroic. In verse 32, and what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and of Barak and of Samson and of Jephthah and of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead, raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance. They didn't recant. That they might what? That they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy, parenthetically he says. And they wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. And these all, having attained a good report through faith, received not the promise. You're talking about courage. You're talking about the grand heroes of ancient times. And what was it that enabled them to endure faith? And let me impress upon our minds, brethren, that's why that all of us need to develop a deep reservoir of faith. Because the times, the circumstances, the events of life may be so that the only thing will sustain us is faith. And I'm confident that the need of the hour among us as the people of God is to build this faith, and these other things are the fruits that will take care of themselves if we just let folks know what they are. We may have it in reverse, and we need to teach people when we talk about church attendance. Folks who have deep, great faith don't have to be driven up every Sunday to worship God as you do stray cattle. They don't have to be prodded. People don't have to be coddled. Because faith moves them to do what the Lord said.
Paul never got married because he had faith.
All right.
He knew the Lord would take care of him.
Oh, that's so true, Pete. Here was Stephen, who was stoned to death, calling upon the Lord. He could have escaped that if he would have just backed off. But he died for the cause of Christ. And I read the lives of these old pioneers that went before us, back before, just after the turn of the century. It moves me to tears. I was noticing Alexander Campbell came to Cincinnati debate Robert Owen and also debate Bishop Purcell. And when he debated Bishop Purcell, a Catholic, it was in April, the coldest part of the winter, as you know, around here. January the 13th. He lived way over at Bethany, then Virginia. It took about a week on horseback to ride into Wellsburg, cross the Ohio River, across this country, perhaps through Chillicothe, and down to Cincinnati. Can you imagine the breeze as it would hit him in the face as he sat there on that old horse? Day after day. But he was there. And the debate took place. A man by the name of Raccoon John Smith, at times, be off on a meeting, he'd come through heading for another one by his house and never get off his horse. He'd drive up, his wife would come out, he would talk to her a moment, he would bend over from his horse as he had to rush in order to meet the appointment. She'd have him maybe some clean clothes, and he would lean over and kiss her and go on to the meeting. That's faith. Many times those men slept out in the open with just the sky as their canopy and the stars, someone said, as the chandeliers. And can you imagine, friends, today we preachers who have it so easy crisscrossing the country on horseback. We would have maybe then, a lot of us, but I tell you, not air conditioning. In the summer, that horse, you know, not too air conditioned in the summer. And no heater in the winter. But they went. What was it? It was deep faith that drove them day after day. Heroic faith. Let me close out. In Hebrews 11, and I'm not going to take the time to read them, but I want you to notice when you get an opportunity that over and over and over, these verses begin by faith. And they have verbs with them showing action. And by faith, it means that God said it and man did it. The thing was done what God prescribed. It was done like God said for it to be done. It was done for the reason that God assigned, and it was done only because God's will required it, and that's faith. We don't launch out on our own. We don't insert our own will. Brethren, that's not faith. That's human wisdom. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. Faith is the assurance of our hopes. It's the certainty of our hopes. It's a conviction of the reality of it. If you're an audience now and not a Christian, let your faith move you to be baptized into Jesus Christ. Because the Lord said, do it. That's basically why you do it. He said, do it. We don't quibble about it. We don't fuss with Him about it. We don't argue about it. We better not. If God said to crawl a mile to be saved, we call a mile. Whatever He said, we do. And though it's not rational from a human standpoint, it makes no sense to us, we conform, we comply, because God said, do it. Would you come today and obey the gospel right now? What we understand.